piece of architecture in your area, you can call the After Dark comment line. The number is 1-850-715-150. That's 1-850-715-150. After Dark on the air just after the 10 o'clock news. This is RTE Radio 1, and now not so different, the series that looks at the realities of being labelled disabled. The presenters are Ruth Bradley and Bill Meek. Hello and welcome. The broad debate as to whether or not cannabis resin should be legalised is definitely an issue outside the remit of this series. Tonight, it will nonetheless be alluded to in the course of a programme which will look at the more particular issue of whether cannabis should be decriminalised for the purposes of alleviating pain or discomfiture experienced by people who have certain disabilities.
We'll be hearing the view of someone who wears many hats. He plays a prominent part in the National Representative Council and sits on the editorial board of Insight magazine. However, it is probably as a disability activist and author that he is best known to the public at large. Paddy Doyle is the man in question. As a matter of fact, he was a contributor to the very first edition of Not So Different on the 30th of January, 1988. Not sure whether he would highlight that in the CV, but it must be said that his voice was very influential in persuading RTE to take on board disability issues as part of the regular schedule. On the question of legalizing cannabis for medical purposes, he has definite personal views, as you'll hear in this conversation with Dave Thomas. Paddy starts by telling us about his own condition.
The medical diagnosis is idiopathic torsion dystonia. Now, it's not, as I keep saying to people, it's not some kind of breakaway Russian republic. Ireland never played dystonia in Lansdowne Road. We did play Estonia. I think we beat them, I can't remember. But anyway, it's a condition of the, let's call it the central nervous system. It's an involuntary movement disorder, no known cure, no known cause. And I mean, that's about as simple as it is. It does come in various forms. That's an important point to make out. Whereas I have what they call the generalized form. In other words, my entire body is affected by it from head to foot. You can also get what they call localized or focal dystonia, which is usually, it might be a twisting of the neck. It might be a very rapid blinking of the eyelids, known as blepharospasm. It may be dysphonia, which is to do with speech, spasm of the vocal cords, maybe a hand, a foot, one side of the body. Any part of the body can actually be affected by it.
You were saying your case is from head to toe, so your whole being, your whole body is affected by it, and therefore you'd have the medication or drugs prescribed to try and control that or help and alleviate that.
I would never be lucky enough to win the lottery, but I would pull the short straw when it came to dystonia. And instead of just getting a bit of localized stuff, I have to get the full blast, which is a bit of a pain. Yeah, there is medication for it, but if you bear in mind that there is no known cause, it begs the question in turn, well, why give medication? It's a bit like saying, you don't have a headache, but take an aspirin anyway for your headache, or a Dispirin, or whatever it's going to be. I would be on what I would describe as copious amounts of medication, all prescribed by GPs, neurologists, so on and so forth, but none of which are any good. That in turn begs the question, and I'm sure people listening would say, well, if they're doing no good, why in the hell is he taking them? Well, fact of the matter is that I will be 50 years of age this year. I have been on medication since I was 15. So it's a kind of a fear factor. It's the fear of what will happen if somebody takes my pills, my comfort blanket away. Now, I stress fear because I don't believe it's an addiction. I think it's just a fear of what would happen. I'd be the first one, I'd be happy enough to get rid of the whole lot of them, all of the various pills I'm on. right now, right this minute, just get shot of them. But unfortunately, I can't.
Well, anybody listening to this interview will know that the main subject we're talking about is cannabis and the legalizing of cannabis and marijuana. And this ties in with the medication. Okay. Now, am I right in saying that you believe that it should be legalized in this to a certain degree, certainly for medical purposes, and that could be something that could help you?
Yes, you're right. It should be legalized for medical use, and in fact, it's somewhat of a disgrace that it's not. If you think about it, for example, one of the ways I can get relief from the symptoms of dystonia, and it's well recognized by doctors, neurologists, and otherwise, is alcohol. Now, there's no law against alcohol. There was up to about the 1930s, and people were drinking all sorts of Parazone and God knows what else. And but I can go around to a pub, and I can drink myself stupid. And I can fall out of the pub, and if there happens to be a couple of Gardaí going by, I might fall on the road, and they might pick me up if they're decent enough lads. And they'll say, "Are you all right?" And I'll say, "Yeah, God." And everything is hunky-dory, and off I go. Likewise, I can smoke 40 cigarettes a day. I used to smoke a lot. Now, the thing is that I am taking into my system both alcohol and nicotine, two of the most lethal substances in the world. And yet, again, if I was caught coming out of the self-same pub with a few too many, nothing would happen to me. If I was caught coming out and a whiff of marijuana wafted up the garda's nose, well, it could be in the nick. And it just seems ridiculous to me that we live in an age where people are talking about herbal remedies or herbal remedies, depending on where you live. And everybody is into natural this and natural that. I mean, people would do well to bear in mind that marijuana has been around since time began. We're not talking about Hoffman LaRoche or Merck Sharp and Dohme having grown this thing yesterday. We're actually talking about something that's been there for hundreds of thousands of years, and which has been proven to be useful in the treatment of conditions like Parkinson's, like in the treatment of multiple sclerosis, in the treatment of dystonia, although to use the word treatment is erroneous in a way, because no doctor is allowed, certainly in this country, to give it as a treatment. But people are then forced into the position that in order to have any kind of pain-free quality of life or discomfort-free quality of life, they're actually forced to become criminals. I mean, I can get all the marijuana I want in Dublin, just the same as you or any of our listeners can. You go out onto the streets, but you don't know what you're getting. My argument is, let's put the thing on a footing where there's some sort of, if you like, standard or control over it, so that we know what we're getting. Nobody in the right mind is going to pick up medication on the street if somebody says, "Well, these are the latest cure for, let's say, arthritis, and I'm just selling them off cheap. Will you take them?" I mean, they could kill you stone dead. It's because they're controlled. And I've always said that whatever my private belief on the legalization of marijuana, that's a separate issue. We're talking here about the use of marijuana for medical use and for people who are in discomfort. Let's look at them and let's ask ourselves one very simple question. Has Paddy Doyle, Joe Bloggs, or Mary Bloggs, have they the right to have access to something that would relieve pain, discomfort? I would say they have, and I would say there's probably a case for the Court of Human Rights here.
But didn't the neurologist write to the Minister for Health and the Minister for Justice and say, "Look, why can't we look into this? Why not have it legalised for medical purposes?" And the answer being, "Well, there's no hard evidence to prove that in actual fact it does do what, you know, you're claiming it does, or
yeah,
could do."
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing is, I make no claims as to what it does. Let's get that clear. All the claims made about what it does are scientifically based claims. You're right, a neurologist did write to the Minister for Health a number of years ago. I think it was Michael Noonan at the time, wrote to him requesting that he, the neurologist, be allowed to try me on marijuana. The minister passed the letter to Nora Owen, who was Minister for Justice, and the bottom line of the whole thing was a flat no, you can't. It's a class one drug. There's no evidence to support that it works. And that was that. It was just bang, shut in your face. Now, my theory is that if Hoffman LaRoche, who make Valium, for example, were able to bottle marijuana, we'd all be on it. And I just think this is like when people were running or threatening to run cars on methane gas made from chicken shit. The petrol companies were in like lights because they didn't want that to happen. And likewise, I think the drugs companies don't want marijuana to come in because people can grow it for half nothing, in fact, for nothing. At home, you can take it in various ways. And the other point I think that should go out very loud and very clear from this interview is that there isn't one single recorded death in the world from the use of marijuana. Now, if you compare that and just take Ireland, for example, how many people at this moment in time, as this interview goes out, how many people are in hospital beds dying from the effects of nicotine and from drink? How many people are in their homes battered because of drink? How many people are we killing, if you like, slowly by allowing them access to drink? Now, I'm not saying ban drink, because that would kill me altogether if they ban drink. Jeez, I'm bad enough. But I mean, the point is, I think we have to get this whole thing in perspective and stop being hysterical. Stop looking at marijuana as some sleaze bag of a fella in a trench coat down the dark alley passing sachets around.
Well, that does happen, that there are people like that that are selling it from down the back alleys of places. And there's also the possibility as well that people who have, say, been in car accidents or whatever, and maybe killed people themselves or whatever, maybe were smoking, marijuana before they were driving, which can affect the judgment of a person as well. Yeah. And maybe, a lot of drug users may have started out with marijuana and then progressed. I think it's a natural progression, but it can happen. So there is this negative and bad link there, isn't there?
Well, I mean, there's no evidence to show that people... There's a recent survey done by Trinity College, for example, by a lady there who did a survey into children who abuse drugs in the inner city. And she found that youngsters who started on marijuana did not graduate onto something harder, not necessarily. On your point about people driving under the influence of drugs, well, it's an interesting point, and I take it. But how many people are driving under the influence of alcohol, and we know killing people stone dead and getting a year in prison or a suspension of their license? How many people have been caught, if you like, under the influence of marijuana? Now, I'm not saying it's right to drive under the influence of any drug, whether it be a sleeping pill prescribed by a doctor or whatever. I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying to drive a car, you need to be in your full faculties. Now, let's take an interesting situation. A couple of years ago, and again only a couple of weeks ago, there was a snooker player, Ronnie O'Sullivan. He was thrown out of some championship because he was found to have marijuana in his system. And he played the best snooker of his life. He potted every ball. Mm-hmm. I just asked myself the question, if that guy had 10 pints of Guinness in him or 10 pints of lager or whatever, would he have potted those balls? I bet you wouldn't. So I think the point is that people say, all right, so you start in marijuana, you're bound to graduate up to heroin. There isn't a shred of evidence to support that. There is no evidence either that I've come across in all the research I've done to suggest that somebody who smokes marijuana is more likely to kill somebody on the roads in a car than anyone else's. And certainly, I have heard it said by very senior and prominent people quietly who would say to you, I wish to God so-and-so would smoke marijuana and give up the blasted drink and stop beating his wife and children. Because at the very worst, with a joint, a fella might fall asleep and save somebody an awful battle.
Well, actually, the smoking as well causes respiratory problems as well, so there's a negative, further negative side effect from that as well is, you know, alcohol affects the liver and so on, and smoking marijuana can do the same thing as well. So,
well, there is the argument, yeah, that smoking in any shape or form is bad for you, okay, but we live in a high-tech age, so there has to be a way of, if you like, getting marijuana into your system. And I mean, I have an entire website up on how to get it into your system without smoking it. And basically, you can put it in cakes, cookies, and all the rest. And I've no doubt that, as I said already, if the drug companies had the handle on this, they'd have it in some sort of vaporized form, like Ventolin or one of those things you take, and you just waft it into your system and away you go. Now, I mean, the other point too that I think is worth bearing in mind is that there is a drug called Marinol, which is a derivative of marijuana. It has the active ingredient THC removed from the marijuana, but it is given to people who are having treatment and being very, very ill from chemotherapy. People who are anorexic benefit from marijuana itself. They actually get hungry. It makes you hungry, so you eat more. And I think if we, you know, if we all just calm ourselves down and stop going hysterical at the mention of marijuana, oh, geez, your man, it's him again. It's the fellow that brought the collapse of the church in Ireland. Now he wants us all smashed out of our heads. This is rubbish. I mean, we have to be sensible. We have to look at people who can clearly demonstrate that by using marijuana and by having to turn themselves into criminals, they have actually bettered their condition. And surely we can't deny somebody the right to improve a condition that's uncomfortable.
Okay, then what do you say to somebody who says that, you know, what you're saying is if it was brought in for medical purposes, that people will get used to the idea of marijuana being in the norm, it'll be part of the norm then, and the liberal attitude then, you know, means that people who would exploit this type of thing will exploit it even further, and people will be more lackadaisy about the whole thing because it's already out there, it's already been used, it's part of the system.
Well, I mean, the very short answer, and no wish to be snappy about it, is that people do the very same with drink. Drink is out there, drink can relax you, it can fix dystonia, Parkinson's, MS, the whole lot, but in the process it destroys your liver. People abuse drink. People sell drink undercover. People, you know, the same way with tobacco, the illegal trade in tobacco, ordinary tobacco, which is the most deadly substance in the world, nicotine in it, is sold openly in places like Henry Street. So, you know, to suggest that marijuana be linked in with those, I agree you have to have some kind of control on it initially. But you have to ask yourself a very simple question, and that is it better to keep a substance like marijuana illegal and have people going off getting God knows what, grass seed, bird seed, some sort of boot polish even, God knows what's in it, rather than to have them getting something which is, if you like, professionally put together for their particular needs? I think it's like everything else. Anything you drive underground, you play straight into the hands of the criminals. And I would safely say, and this is speaking, if you like, on the broader front, that if a situation arose tomorrow where the government decided, as they have done in parts of the United States, to legalize marijuana, just in the general sense, half the drug barons in this country would be gone out of business. They'd be bust overnight. So, I mean, that is one argument that can be put. And again, just to make the point that there is not one single shred of evidence to show that people who start smoking marijuana end up on heroin. And in fact, I was talking to a journalist recently who worked in the inner city for a while with youngsters who were into the drugs thing. And they wouldn't even ask you for marijuana. They weren't interested in it. It was no good. There was no kick out of it. They wanted hard drugs. We're talking serious stuff here. We're talking heroin. We're talking very serious drugs. Marijuana, phew, you can stuff it up your jumper, mister. You know, they're not interested.
Okay, then let's say that it was made into a pill form or some other vaporized or whatever, but the prescribed drug now, right? In what way do you think then it would make a difference to you?
Well, it's very difficult to know because in theory and in practice, where I have smoked it twice in my life, and that's been absolutely genuine. And unlike Bill Clinton, yes, I did inhale the stuff. I can't honestly say it's a cure, it's a fix, whatever. But what I think should be done is what's happening in Britain now on a regular basis. The very conservative BMA are now trying marijuana on people with MS and Parkinson's and dystonia as well. They're also trying it on various other conditions too. But the important point to remember here is that we are saying no. We're just no. So by saying no, you're actually denying somebody the right to treatment. And I personally feel very strongly about that because under the UN Convention on Human Rights, there is a right to be treated as appropriate for whatever pain or discomfort you may have. Now, that right, if it involves marijuana, well, then we've got to invoke it and say, okay, let me give you a very quick example. Heaven forbid, but let's say I was in a road traffic accident and I got a bang of a car, which didn't really injure me too much, but distressed me a lot. What happens with any involuntary movement disorder is that the movement is greatly exaggerated by the stress. So I'm hauled into, we'll say, one of the major Dublin hospitals, it doesn't matter, and they think I'm in pain, so they'll offer me morphine, pethidine. I say, no, lad, sorry, I don't want that. If I could just have some marijuana. You want what? You know, they think I was a geriatric hippie from the 60s. So I can have deadly, addictive drugs like morphine, pethidine, bordering on the heroin. But I can't have marijuana. All seems very strange to me.
So what they're saying is that, right, then just to sum up in a way to say that, okay, what Paddy Dodd is not saying is let's legalize it tomorrow, right? But what would be better is to look into the possibility, exploring the different avenues and what's available to make this thing into a prescribed medication and then have it legalized so that it can be used if it's, of course, if it works.
Yes, I mean, I would have no hesitation whatsoever in coming back on to this program and after 6 or 8 month trial of marijuana and saying to you, well, it worked or it didn't work. And if it didn't work, well, okay, so be it. But to be denied the right is really the case I'm making. That's the argument I'm making. Whether marijuana in the future is ever legalized or not, broader front, and I believe it will be. That's not the issue at the moment. The issue at the moment is very simply, and I know I've said it before, and I make no apology for saying it again, and that is that people with various disabilities which are uncomfortable and cause a lot of stress, pain, and hassle are being forced to go the criminal road and get marijuana by illegal means. Now, I would imagine, I don't know, but my My better judgment suggests to me that the Gardaí are turning a blind eye to this, and I would safely say that most judges in courts would rather not see such cases coming before them. That is, if there is proof, and there is an abundance of proof. As I say, my own website is a classic example of where I'm not writing it, I'm just taking stuff which is balanced, the pros and the cons, the good and the bad, the possibility of addiction, the possibility of cure, not cure, but the possibility of alleviation of symptoms. You can look at it and then you make up your own mind. But as I say, it is very interesting to look at, you know, things like Prozac. You have parts of the United States now that are known as Happy Valley, because the whole place, including the animals, are on Prozac. But the research being done into drugs like Prozac at the moment is anything but positive. So at least I'm saying, well, let's try this thing. Let's control the marijuana route. Let's go down that road. Give people a stab at it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And I'd be the first to come back to you and say, it didn't work.
Well, no one can argue that that is not a fair offer. It's something which may well arise in the future, although right now we must depart. Till next time, goodbye.
That programme was presented by Ruth Bradley and Bill Meek, who's also the producer. Next on Not So Different, from St. Mary's School, Baldoyle, we'll share Hurling.
Okay, off we go.